You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are in Antequera.
It's gonna be all right. Everything's gonna be all right, yeah.
Thanks for that, Fran. My name is Richard Moore. That was Fran Reyes.
Hello, Richard.
My name is Daniel Friedman. That was awful.
I liked it. I've heard worse.
My singing is not great. You know that, but you force me every day to sing.
I didn't force you there. That was entirely voluntary.
Can we have some Enrique Iglesias in the next few days?
Sure, you can have it now if you want. But I think that would be too much.
Hang on, we've got a very, very instant-packed, dramatic stage to talk about. So let's crack on with that, shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have to do the tail of the tapper? It's my least favourite bit of the podcast. Do we have to do that?
Yeah.
We've all seen
okay,
it.
Okay, I'm going to do it really quickly, right? Stage 12, Motril to Antequera. Woke up this morning to find out the Aqua Blue Sport bus had been set on fire overnight. We'll hear about that in part two. Reaction from the team. George Bennett, Serge Pels were out. 14-rider break went pretty early. Among the notable riders, Edward Toynes from Trek Segafredo. He would be useful later on. Wink, wink. Thomas Marcinski, who'd won a stage already. Look out for him in the tail of the etapa. And Omar Frehley was there as well. Brendan Canty from Cannondale Drapac. Several others. They got 7 minutes. Frehley attacked. I think he was one of the first to attack from that group. Marcinski then got away on his own. There was a chasing group of Frehley, Canty, Rojas, Franz Mann, and Poljanski, another guy we've seen a lot of. Behind, Contador attacked. This was on the final climb, the Puerto del Torcal. Contador attacked, took Nicholas Roach with him, almost said Stephen. The leaders, meanwhile, were on the descent. Canty had a spectacular fall over the barriers. Behind, Contador's away. Froome crashed once, bent a lever on his bike, changed bikes, then crashed again. And in the end, Marcinski won his second stage. Contador gained, who hooked up with Toynes, and we'll hear from Toynes in a moment. Contador gained 22 seconds. Froome lost 20 seconds. Nothing much has changed, apart from a little loss of time by Froome. And maybe he's badly hurt. He came to the press conference with bandages on both knees. There were other incidents as well today. A fan fell in front of the motorbike following Alberto Contador. It looked initially like he was at fault. Now we see that a policeman pushed him into the path of the motorbike, although he was running up alongside Contador. So don't condone that, but he was manhandled by the policeman, which caused him to fall in front of the motorbike. Unpleasant. Maxim Belkov, the Katusha rider, claims on Facebook that he was pushed off his bike by fans as well. So lots of unsavoury incidents there. Three of them I count there. But a dramatical day, and I don't think we really expected that, did we, Daniel?
Dramatical.
Dramatic old day.
Oh, I think it's a dramatical. I thought you were making words. Dramatic. It seemed quite dull, didn't it? It seemed like a routine transitional.
You caught me having an afternoon nap, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Several. I think it was about your third siesta during the day.
First one of the Vuelta.
And then it all kicked off and it all crackled into life on the final climb, didn't it? And I suppose Contador's attack was fairly predictable, or you could have predicted it. And quite surprised by Froome crashing. I mean, it's been a feature of his riding the last few months that he's looked so assured on those descents. Spoke to Nibali at the finish. He was prickly again. But he said that it was a very slippery descent and he was right behind Froome when he crashed the first time. But he deliberately was staying a couple of metres, laying a couple of metres off Froome because he was slightly worried that something might happen. Sure enough, it did. And then there was a bit of a sort of twilight zone, a bit of a mystery as to what happened exactly.
A few of those on the
Vuelta. When Froome crashed, did Bahrain surge right to the front? I don't think they did, judging by the way Contador's time gap, it went up quite quickly. It seemed to go up quite quickly at first, and then they did go to the front and obviously started, well, stabilising that gap started to stabilise. They were eating into it. But Nibali sort of balked at that suggestion that they had waited even for a moment after Froome's crash. I think Michael Morco, the Katusha rider, said that Ilnur Zakarin and his leader had told him and asked him not to ride on the front while Froome was struggling off the back of the peloton. But then when they saw Bahrain go to the front, they duly went to the front as well.
Interestingly,
and everyone piled in.
It was Zakarin who was one of the first, if not the first, to go to the front in the Giro when Tom Dumoulin crashed. He was the one that really lit the touch paper. This is a debate, a discussion we've been having all season. I think with Contador up the road, you don't wait. I mean,
no.
Keeping upright is part of cycling, and yeah. It was a slippery descent. There were a few incidents. It was a great move by Contador, and in the end, perhaps not worth the effort, but nevertheless, it made the stage very exciting.
Well, yeah, he did indeed come the stage to life. You said, Daniel, earlier that the Contador's attack was predictable. Okay, to be honest, I didn't think he was going to attack today until I heard what he told Spanish press right at the bus as he started. He told them that this stage wasn't good for attacking, and given his reputation of Pinocchio, it was clear that he was going to attack.
A compatriot.
Yeah, but you know, having said that, I think that we have to be kind of thankful to Alberto Contador, because after all, he leads up a lot of races. Had it not been for him, probably today nothing would have happened.
And Rich, you said he didn't gain much, but you could argue that Contador forced Froome into the crash, created the pressure, had Froome crashed out of the race. Obviously, that's not something that Contador wouldn't have wished ill upon Froome in that manner, but Froome could have crashed out of the race and Contador all of a sudden would have been right in contention to
Absolutely.
Win the Vuelta again.
If you put pressure on, and as you say, Froome hasn't made a mistake. We actually had an interview in part three of the podcast tonight from Michael Woods, the Cannondale Drapet rider, who talks a bit about Froome, and one of the comments he makes is that he hasn't made a single mistake the whole Vuelta. He recognises he's made a couple of mistakes, and what has impressed him about Froome is not made a single mistake. We very rarely see him make these kind of mistakes. I mean, he said the front wheel went away from him, he hit a slippy bit of the road initially, but then he came off again because he seemed to get the line wrong going into a corner. It was a Katusha car parked. That could have been, I think their intentions were, you know, to pull in and let him go through. It could have just affected his line going into that corner.
Yeah, but today, Froome, in my opinion, he lost more than 20 or 40 seconds. He has lost the
skin.
He lost skin off his knees, yeah.
Yeah, that too, but also the confidence, you know. He has been coming to the Vuelta for years and failing to win it because of different circumstances. And to break that unlucky streak of incidents, he should have kept upright today.
Yeah, Fran, but he could take the opposite view of it and he could say, well, this is proof that everything is going to go well in this Vuelta, because previously, in the previous three that he's lost, or certainly the last two that he's not won, the mistakes have been punished severely, haven't they? And they've been punished to the extent that they've cost him the race win, whereas today, he kind of got away with it.
He did. Let's hear from Contador's teammate, Edward Toynes, who was absolutely exhausted at the finish. He did a great job. It was textbook stuff. He was in the break. He sat up, waited for Contador, certainly made sure he got to the climb, top of the climb first, and then he was a great ally for him when he needed a bit of support. You know, that's why he took Roach with him. Roach just didn't have the legs to stay with Contador, but Toynes was incredibly useful to Contador today. Here he is at the finish, Edward Toynes. That was a big effort, a big job you had there.
I was happy I finally got in the break. I tried already a couple of days, but today I waited long enough. I went one time, and I think on the last climb I quickly felt the guys in the front went too fast, so I just tried to make it to the top, and there I waited for Alberto and tried to go full in the downhill with him. But yeah, they said in the car, try to go to the finish with him, but my legs never hurt so much in my life. I gave everything I had, and glad he takes some seconds.
When did you hear that he was coming across?
Kilometer of three before the top of the last climb, they said Alberto attacked, so first I had to make it to the top of the climb, and there I was standing still for like 2-3 minutes to wait for him, and then we just went full in the downhill, and it was not easy because there still were some nasty uphills, small uphills, and I tried to follow him there, but that really hurted my legs so much, and but I could survive some of the bumps and then do some work in the downhill, so I hope I helped him a little bit.
So your verdict, he's going very well.
I mean, if you attack all the GC favorites, and I mean, since Andorra he had one bad day there, and since then he's taking back time every day almost, so I think he's really good, and it's really an honor to be here for his last race.
So that was Toynes. It's always difficult for riders who crash. I mean, they're affected by that. It affects their sleep, their ability to rest and recover. We don't know how badly injured Froome is. In terms of time, he got away with it, and he had a couple of teammates to help him, but it might not have done as much damage as was initially feared. A word for Thomas Marcinski, a rider who you know very well and lives locally, Fran.
Polish, living in Granada since, I think, 5 years. Great guy. He decided some time ago that he wasn't going to win the Tour de France, so he could just have a good life while still being a cyclist. And he indeed does have this tattooed on his forearm. Disfruta la vida. Enjoy life.
Before we leave today's stage and move on, Fran, as I said earlier, we've talked a lot about the, inverted commas, unwritten rule of waiting for the race leader when he has a problem. It's been a real hot topic this year because obviously we had Dumoulin at the Giro. We then had Froome with a mechanical in at the Tour de France on the stage into Chambéry, where Richie Porte forced others to wait. Froome wouldn't be drawn on it in the press conference afterwards on whether he didn't know whether Nibali and co had actually driven it. But my view is, and it's been consistent this year, the race is on. I mean, Dumoulin, the Giro, they had Kruijswijk and others up the road. They couldn't wait for Dumoulin to answer call of nature. At the Tour de France, I don't think the group should have waited for Froome. And here, absolutely not. I mean, the race is in the closing stages. Alberto Contador, who's still a threat, an outside threat in this race. You know, he's up there in the top 10 now. Mm-hmm. You don't wait for Chris Froome and let Contador claim a minute, 2 minutes, do you?
We often tend to reduce cycling to a matter of physical performance, but I think that competition in cycling does include way more factors than that, and one of those is skill. If you are not skilled enough to keep yourself on the bike on a descent, then it's something that eventually is going to take a toll on you. And also the material is important. If you have a good bike or solid components that aren't going to bend or whatever, then you have a competitive advantage that it has to play in your favor.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
About 1:20 a.m, fire and police officers arrived at the street just behind the hotel in Almeria. We were alerted then. I think our bus driver was the first to be told of it. All the staff got up straight away, started trying to work now. The bus is a complete write-off. It's burnt completely, and there's a lot of shoes, a lot of specialist shoes, a lot of helmets, other equipment all burnt in this bus. So we've suffered a massive loss. There's a lot of shoes got missing, like the race shoes, they leave them in there. They usually travel back and forward to the start and to the side and in their runners, but in their sneakers or whatever you want to call it, their trainers. So some of the riders are going to start today probably in their blue helmet, or blue helmet that we use for the rest of the year, the Giro helmets. They were in the truck, but thankfully we haven't lost any of our bikes or wheels. You know, other bits and pieces like bidons and things like that, they're all stored in the truck. There's not a whole pile of positives to take, but at least we haven't lost everything. We're all sleeping very, very deep sleeps, so the guys weren't walking by it. We told them this morning at breakfast, they weren't aware of it at all. And in fact, we made a conscious decision not to tell them. We want our riders to be focused totally on the race.
We have what it takes to race, and thanks to the organizer for putting up, helping us with the bus within 2 hours. Fantastic support from the organizers, and thanks to all the other teams for coming and asking if they can help in any way possible. Well, they've just said if you need anything, then you know, space in our bus, but anything you're missing, just come and ask. Hopefully tomorrow evening we'll have a bus that will be equipped for the needs of a cycling team, with shower and toilet and these things. This is a normal passenger bus provided by the organization. So by tomorrow evening, we should have another thing, bus in place.
We heard there from Nicky Sorensen, a sports director at Aqua Blue, and Niall O'Connor, the press officer at Aqua Blue Sport, to give them their full name. I think the interviews were pretty self-explanatory. They were reflecting this morning, of course, on the dreadful overnight incident where an arsonist set fire to their bus and gutted it, and that's not what anybody wants. I mean, they're a small team, you know, making their Grand Tour debut, and other teams seem to rally around them a bit, which is nice to see. And they were in a replacement bus, as we heard there today. It was a, you know, classic 52-seater bus, few spare seats there, and they are hoping to get a replacement bus from a Portuguese team that's kindly offered them their team bus.
Which team is it?
You told me earlier.
L.A. Aluminios Metalusa.
Is this you doing your thing again?
No. I was
putting
just going to say
spot.
That they are lucky that it's not...
I don't know which team, actually, but yeah, apparently.
Yeah, it's a shame that it is not the W52 Porto team bus, because they were flying in the Volta Portugal, and I think that if they got their bus, Stefan Denifel had a chance of standing atop the podium in Madrid in 10 days.
Strangely enough, their bus, there's no link here at all, but their bus is the ex-Tinkoff bus, and the Tinkoff bus was derailed at the Tour de France last year. They had two buses, so I'm not sure if this is the same one, but the Tinkoff team at the Tour last year, it was a sort of metaphor for their Tour, but they spent a good chunk of it, a good week or so, in a 52-seater standard coach. Yeah. So
I come from Almeria, where this incident happened. So probably I have been riding sitting in that bus before. And if I can make a statement, usually in Almeria we never burn team buses. You know, only regular buses, but not team buses.
Well, the guy who's been arrested seems to have he set fire to other vehicles as well, and he seemed to be known to the police. And is it a common crime down here?
Not really. I mean, we have quite huge problems with fires in forests and natural parks and so on, but that's not the main crime that is committed here. In this case, it was a pyromaniac.
An arsonist.
Yeah, a pyromaniac that apparently had some sort of meltdown health issues and wandered for 3 hours around the whole Almeria, lighting fire to both vehicles and every road furniture he could find.
Your struggle there with pyromaniac reminds me, someone asked on Twitter today, what is Spanish for derailleur, which you...
Desviador.
Okay, there you go. There's a question answered. One listener wondered that. But terrible for Aqua Blue Sport, who have contributed a lot to the Vuelta. They had a rider up in the break again today. And, a dreadful incident to happen, and they were obviously it's not going to derail them, but nobody wants to see that kind of thing happen. And in the middle of a Grand Tour, when it's such a tough exercise anyway, losing stuff, coping with the logistical challenges that come with losing your bus, it's not what you want.
Yeah, but let's take the chance to assert that indeed Aqua Blue is having a quite good participation on the Vuelta. I mean, back when they were Then when they received the wild card, there was a lot of speculations and comment whether this team had the level to perform on such a race. And I think that so far it has been pretty decent. They have been close to the victory with Adam Blythe, and they have been in every meaningful...
Adam Blythe, I like it. They have. Yeah. They've done everything that we could have expected from them and more. They've been very prominent. And it's that, you know, when they got the invitation, they hadn't proved themselves at all. I think they have in other races too. They've sort of justified their inclusion here, and you know, some of the other wild card teams, the invited teams, Cofidis, have been pretty invisible. Manzana, Postobon, to be fair, have been up there as well in lots of breaks. But the thing about Cofidis and Postobon, they are Vuelta sponsors as well, and one does wonder whether their sponsorship, the company's sponsorship of the race, is a factor in them being invited.
Well,
I mean, you don't really wonder, do you?
It is.
Whereas Aqua Blue Sport seemed to have been invited on sporting merit.
Not only sporting merit, they also open a key market, the Anglo-Saxon market, which the Vuelta is
pretty... Okay, don't ruin it, Fran.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Sorry. No, but they are factor for market that the Vuelta looks forward to, which is the Anglo-Saxon one. And also, it seems like Aqua Blue somehow has... It's a hot prospect for organizers. You know, they are even lobbying to get a World Cup for the upcoming Tour de France. And they were invited also to the Hammer Series by Belong. So probably there are further factors than the sporting one.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our main sponsor. I should have also said at the start of the last part, thanks to Science and Sport. We heard a little message from them. And you can still get your 20% discount, scienceandsport.com, with the code CPAUG20. And without Science and Sport and Rafa supporting us, we wouldn't be here driving around Spain. And it's lovely to be back in sunshine again, and Andalusia.
Yeah, to be fair, you haven't driven that much during these 2 days, have you?
I've been taking a back seat, so to speak. You've been driving me, Fran.
Exactly. Quite fast, haven't I?
Quite fast, yeah. On occasions, yeah.
I'm got a dirigible driver.
Yeah, I've got to keep an eye on you. if any of these speeding tickets come through my door, they'll be winging their way back to Granada. Don't you worry. Anyway, we have week two, Pedlar de Charme shortlist coming up. A beautiful Rafa t-shirt will go to the winner. It'll be decided by a Twitter poll, as usual. I put out the call for nominations earlier today. Lots of nominees. We're going to hear an interview from one of the nominees coming up very soon. It's almost an opportunity for him to lobby on his behalf, even though he didn't know at the time that he was going to be nominated. But anyway, do you want to hear my shortlist for Pedlar de Charme?
Yeah, of course.
Tobias Ludvigsen.
Yeah.
Who, Francis de Jure rider, who was in a break and performed a very neat little wheel flick during the break. So that caught a lot of people's eye. Michael Woods, popular nomination from people. They've liked what they've seen and heard with Michael Woods. Mikel Nievi, Team Sky, very loyal, domestique, totally selfless rider, it seems, a lot of the time.
Yesterday dropped his next year leader,
briefly.
Esteban Chavez.
Yeah, and the final nominee, Fran, Joe Dombrowski.
Oh, come on! We said it was going to be Jose Joaquin Rojas.
No, we didn't. You can't be nominated. A few people have nominated Joe Dombrowski. I think people like Joe Dombrowski, but also he's quite witty. He made that comment the other day about giving our journalists interviews in exchange for $7 million. I think some people were impressed by the ride he put in support of Michael Woods on, you know, just after hearing that the team may fold at the end of the year.
He deserves a nomination.
Conor Dunn, very close again this week. I feel like Conor Dunn should be there. There's not room for five. It's very difficult, that.
Yeah.
God.
Well, don't worry if he deserves to win the Pedal of the Charm. If God wants him to win a Pedal of the Charm, he will be nominated again next week.
You know what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
I'm going to do an hour-long Twitter poll to decide between Dombrowski and Conor Dunn.
And Jose Joaquin Rojas.
Yeah, okay. For the final spot. Okay. Great. For the final spot in the fourth.
Semi-finals.
By the time you hear this, this will all have been decided. But we will then launch a Twitter poll to find Pedlar de Charme. If you want to wear one of these beautiful Rafa-designed and produced T-shirts yourself, you go to rafa.cc. Or, simpler actually, cyclingpodcast.com, thecyclingpodcast.com, shop. And that will take you to the Cycling Podcast page on the Rafa website. And you can scoop up as much merchandise as you like. And in doing so, you support us too. So very much appreciated. They've been very popular, the T-shirts and the jerseys. Now, Michael Woods was one of the riders. Well, it's certainly going to be one of the riders shortlisted for Pedlar de Charme. I spoke to him this morning. Always an interesting guy to talk to. Having a real breakthrough here. Let's hear what he had to say this morning. Here's Michael Rusty Woods. I mean, you must be delighted with how you're riding.
I'm really pleased. I mean, my goal has been, I came here with the goal of winning a stage. We didn't rule out the GC. It was just like, let's not lose time. I made a couple mistakes in the first week, but so was everyone else.
What were they?
The first GC day, stage three, I lost 20 some odd seconds. And it wasn't really a mistake. It was more just I wasn't race fit, really fit, but just not super sharp. And I lost some time on that climb. And then when I got the news that the team was folding, it was the day before, it was Saturday, so stage, can't remember now, I forget what stage it was, but it was the day before I came third, and I had the legs to finish with Contador and Froome in that split that they had, but I just got anxious and nervous about really proving myself, because I just wanted to I want to race in the World Tour next year. So I made a really foolish error in just attacking Froome when he still had guys on the front. And then blew up. and lost a bunch of spots and ended up finishing 30 seconds back to that group. But otherwise, I've been riding really consistent. And the coolest part about the last 11 days is the fact that the guys on the team have really rallied around me. Like the day where I came third, the team was insane. Like they really sold out for me. And especially, I'm probably the guy with the most secure future at the moment. Not that that means that I've got a contract or anything, but their team's interested in me, whereas the eight other riders on the team have no clue what's happening, and they all sold out for me. And that was, like, I got emotional. I got teary on the bus afterwards thanking everybody.
Yeah. You must have a real sense now of where you stand with the other guys. You're in the top 10, but you must have a sense now of how, you know, assuming your form stays and you don't, everyone's going to get tired, but you must have a sense now of where you are.
Totally. I'm going to lose time in the time trial. I just haven't put in the time in on it, and that was because we were just really targeting stages when I first came here, so I didn't get on the time trial bike between Tour de Suisse and here. I think I got some opportunities to make up for that loss that I'll incur in the time trial on the climbs to come, just because I think I am climbing with top four or five guys in this race, and I'm feeling good. I'm feeling better every day. So, I mean, the race is in no way done. We still have a lot of accumulated fatigue that's going to be building. But yeah, I'm feeling good at the moment.
What are your impressions of Froome up close? Because you've not really raced with him in a Grand Tour and seen him from this vantage point. What are your impressions of him, and how far away do you feel he is?
Like you said, I've only raced him once in Catalonia. I've read his book, and like he's kind of an inspiration to me, just because he's a guy that's kind of come at it the hard way. He wasn't a guy that was, you know, groomed at 15 to be the next best thing. And he's been really classy to me. He's come up and talked to me a bunch. And the things he said in the media about our team, all the guys really kind of respected that. Well, not kind of. What he said about the team really, everyone on the team appreciated. And yeah, he's been really good to me. And it's also been cool to watch how consistent he is and how much of a champion he is. Like, I'm starting to realize what kind of mental fortitude it takes to ride a GC at a Grand Tour. This is my first time doing it. You have to be on day in, day out. And I said I made mistakes. He hasn't made one mistake this race. He's just been super consistent, super cool. Yeah, I have a lot of respect for that.
Are you able to block out what's happening with the team and really focus on the race when the race is on? Are you finding that it's affecting you away from, you know, taking your head away from the race at all?
Initially, it was affecting me. I made the mistake of letting it affect me. But I think I just have to be conscious of the fact that, like, you know, I'm going well. I'm really on form, and I can't control what's going to happen with the team or with others' team's interest. I can only control my performances. Since the performance we had as a team and I had on the stage where I placed third, I think I've really managed to kind of start blocking that out and leave that just for the evenings when my phone's blowing up and I'm texting everybody and trying to figure out a job for next year.
So that was Michael Woods. I mean, it sounds to me very much as though he is not confident that the team will continue. And as a few people have said, he'd be crazy to not look at other options. He's a hot property at the moment, the way he's riding at this Vuelta. I hear a little dicky bird tells me that Team Sky may well be interested in him, although they hadn't planned for him. I think Dylan van Baarl, the Cannondale Drapet rider, may well be going to Team Sky. He would be a replacement for Luke Rowe, who's out injured, a pretty direct replacement while he recovers from his recent leg break. Not sure how long he's going to be out, but Dylan van Baarl would be a good insurance policy. And I think they would like Michael Woods. They see him as a guy who could certainly be developed. There's so much. He's 30 years old, but, you know, he's in cycling years, he's about 24.
Yeah, what is interesting about Michael Woods' world is that we already knew that he was able to put a huge deal of watts up sharp climbs, but his consistency during 1 or even 3 weeks was yet to be proven. And
it's still,
proven,
and it,
it.
Well, it still has to be proven, to be fair. Obviously, we're deep into week two. Yeah. He said there that he's feeling better and better. And, you know, by this point of a race, it's quite settled, isn't it? Really, I mean, these guys generally know what they're capable of. And he's riding quite comfortably, I say that, with all respect to the yeah. savage nature of the Vuelta and the courses and the racing. Yeah. But he's there, you know, and he doesn't look in danger. And provided his health remains, and I don't think his form's going to go away. So Yeah, he's riding extremely well. He's in eighth overall at the moment and looking a pretty good bet for a top 10, which would be a phenomenal result in only his second year in the World Tour. Now, sure. You spoke to another rider who's impressed and getting more impressive, I think, as the race goes on, and that is Wilco Kelderman, the Team Sunweb rider, leader.
Let's hear from him. How are you?
I'm good. Happy that the sun is coming out again.
Yeah. How did yesterday's stage feel? Because, I mean, Haas was too tough, but at the same time, I think it brought good news for you.
The first week was not too good with the crash and flat tire on a bad moment. I feel better and better, and yesterday I had really good legs. I knew that I'm always good in the rain, so that gave me a little bit of confidence. Yeah, and the final was full of racing, and then I could stay with the best, and that was really good for me. I felt really good.
What kind of conclusions can we take from you arriving yesterday with Froome and Nibali?
I'm in really good shape of form now. I hope to stay there and to fight with the best. But I look day by day, and I'm happy that the legs are good, and we'll see.
As you can hear, he sounds pretty confident, proud of his ride so far. And yeah, we were talking of boots. As someone who has yet to prove his consistency over 3 weeks, and Wilco is very much in the same position. But the Sunweb team does trust him a lot. He was touted as best lieutenant for Tom Dumoulin in his Giro beat. Unfortunately, crashed out of the Giro quite early because of that motorbike incident. And now he's the GC designated leader, and he is kind of fulfilling the task.
He is. He rode very well at the Giro a couple of years ago and really announced himself as a potential sort of GC rider. It seems that he's moving into more of a support role. Okay, he's leading the team here at the Vuelta. I think he'll be a very, very useful ally for Tom Dumoulin next year, perhaps at the Tour de France. You know, that's their want to obviously build a team around him. And that was a factor perhaps sending Warren Barguil home. Interesting range of views on that, speaking to other teams and so on. Some are adamant that they would have sorted it out, and that these kind of disagreements are quite common. We don't know exactly what happened. There are rumours of an actual kind of confrontation between Barguil and the sports director. Don't know if that's true or not. The truth will come out at some point, I'm sure. But it must have been pretty extreme for him to be sent home. But I also think that just having a toxic presence in the team, if that's what he was, then, you know, sending him home would have perhaps lifted a weight off the rest of the team. And, you know, they're here at the Vuelta, they're, as I said at the start, to support Wilco Kelderman. But they've got Sam Omen as well, still riding extremely well. We heard from him a few days ago in the podcast. We should wrap things up, Fran, because my hotel's got a swimming pool tonight, so I'm very keen to get there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We were, I mean, this is your neck of the woods. You took me to your village last night, to your father's shoe shop. We stopped at your father's shoe shop, and you stayed with your parents around the corner. Very nice little village it is.
Yeah, well, my village, Berja, also known as Penny Lane, as I said yesterday.
Well, I didn't ask you, why is it known as Penny Lane?
Well, because a professor I had in my university was a very good friend of mine, and every time we spoke about my village, he said that everything worked backwards back there. So it was kind of a Penny Lane. And yeah, that's why my clothes are so well ironed today. My mother insisted on ironing everything I had on my luggage.
Could you not have slipped a few of my t-shirts in there as well? And maybe the Pedlar de Charme t-shirts before we give them out. Yeah. They certainly need a bit of an iron.
She wanted to iron my Rafa jacket as well.
I hope that either Woods or Nieve win, because the t-shirts that we've got are extra small. And I'm sure Dombrowski, Ludvigsson, all the others would actually probably squeeze into them okay, but I think Woods would be a comfortable wearer of this t-shirt. I think it'd mean a lot to him, you know, to win. Okay, it's one thing to be riding the top 10 of the Vuelta in your second year in the World Tour, but imagine winning Pedlar de Charme.
You know, but a top 10 on the Vuelta is ephemeral, because next year there are going to be another 10 riders making the top 10, but a Pedlar de Charme t-shirt
lasts forever. Oh, on that note, you might have noticed, but we lost Daniel, and we'll hopefully resume with him tomorrow night. But that's all from Fran and me. Goodbye, Fran.
Goodbye, Richard.